Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew, where your favorite horror movies are paired with craft brews and ciders from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Your hosts this evening are Aaron Hatfield, Grace Schrick, and Lee Despain. Fear goes better with beer.
Hey, are we actually recording?
Yep.
We're not going to do a repeat of...
Nope, we are recording. We have power from the wall. SD card is in.
Sweet.
Yeah, looks like we have made fire.
I have made fire.
Perfect. Yeah, you think it's our first time. We're like degrading now. Wait, did we turn it on? Are we actually recording?
Trying to grunt our way through this.
That's right. Well, this is going to be weird enough to get through anyways.
Well, was one that we did 20 minutes of talking and then we weren't recording. And then just recently, the SD card was full or something like that, right?
Yeah, I stuck it in, pressed record. The thing lit up. I was like, sweet. And Grace is like, what's it saying down there? I'm like, yeah. I don't know. What is that?
I am going to dread going through an entire podcast and having nothing happen. Everybody says it happens.
But it will happen someday. Well, we have an entire podcast that will never happen. So,
You know what?
Yeah. So I think there you go. That was our one. We got it out of the way right up front.
Oh, there you go.
Three times. That's
We've done three times the amount of work that most people do when they just forget it once.
That's right. Fuck. We kept trying and trying and trying.
Oh, my God.
Oh, shoot. Well, what brings us here today?
Awesomeness, horror movie film festival awesomeness is what brings us gathering today.
That's totally true. Hard to describe it as anything other.
No, it was, you know what, the Portland Horror Film Festival is what we're talking about. And this was the first, I've been to them a number of times, but this is the first time that I've done all 4 days.
Me as well. I have purchased the all 4 day ticket before and then always had like one day where I had to work or one day where, you know, something else came up because a lot of times it conflicts with Portland Beer Week. And especially for us, where we do horror and beer, we make room for both. So,
but you still get all the cool swag by buying the four.
Absolutely. And you support them, which is the most important thing, I think. So I've been buying the 4 day pass even on the years where I've worked 3 of the 4 days and it's only go once.
Yeah, no, you're number one fan, dude.
I enjoy it. And this year was no exception. And to be quite honest, going all 4 days made it even greater, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to you earlier about how funny it was that you and I went there all 4 days and we didn't really have a chance to talk about our experiences or what the shorts were and what the feature films were
and
until right now.
Let's see what happens. Yeah.
It's all raw. What do the kids say? Going in raw dog?
I don't think that's what they say.
They don't?
I've heard it. If they do, they should stop. Yeah.
Oh, shit. So you got some factoids or some call-outs here, don't you?
I have a couple things. I wrote down just a couple of my favorites because I wanted to not sit here and go while I was trying to recall what went down. So I did peruse the program a little bit. Mark down some of my favorite moments.
That was a smart thing because I saw you sketching notes in the dark.
I did. I wrote a lot of things in the dark that I then translated into coherency when the lights came back on or at home later that evening. But I wanted to take notes while I watched a lot of these things because I knew that we would be sitting down and talking about it. And the fact is that going to something like this for 4 days isn't like going to a con. You know, you're not walking around with all your buddies and chatting and talking and then waiting in a line for an hour for an autograph and then shopping a little bit. Your butt's in a seat and you're watching stuff happen. And it's great stuff, but it's really static and it's nonstop because they have packed a lot into these 4 days.
Yeah, you would think because I was like, oh, great. I'm going to be able to just chill out, sit for 5-6 hours watching movies, horror flicks. It was more exhausting than going to a 3-day con, man.
Totally can be. Yeah. But we're talking about 6 feature films. We're talking about more than 40 shorts.
Yeah.
Short films from Korea, Taiwan, Brazil, Canada, Norway, Spain, Australia, Ireland, in the States, of course, all across the United States. I mean, a lot of material to get through in just those 6 days. And that's not even counting the Q&As.
Right. The and special meet and guests, and which is so cool. Stuff that happens
before and after. There was always like a meeting party before each day, and they usually have some form of an after party after each night. So yeah, it was a...
It really was a festival of international independent horror films. It was just all... I mean, totally. Encompassing.
Yeah, and we've been going to it while we've been doing the podcast, but we never really dove into it enough to feel that we could kind of do it justice in covering it until this year when we actually plunked our bottoms down for the entire time.
So. Professionals or something. I mean, we really put the dedication in on this one.
Don't know anything about professional, but I did show up.
I showed up. I drank beer. Watched movies.
So this whole thing is the brainchild. Well, it's not the brain. Well, yeah, it is their brainchild. Of Brian and Gwen Callahan. They are known in the Portland area, especially for their involvement in the Lovecraft Festival of films that they've put on every October since 2011. I've also been to several of those. They also run a website called the Arkham Bazaar, where they basically do a lot of screen printing and laser cutting and carving and all sorts of fun things, all with a Lovecraftian horror kind of twisty, tentacle-y vibe. Definitely our kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? We had the opportunity to, after the first night, head over to a local watering hole, the Moon and Sixpence, and sit down and unwind. And they were there. Mm-hmm. And they just came over and introduced themselves and sat down with us. And friendliest people you can imagine.
The same exact thing happened to me last year, actually, after one of the evenings. Headed over there, and there they were, and we ended up sitting together.
That's their favorite go-to after the things because – the third night out, they showed up there with the special guest.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and that was pretty cool.
We can give away spoilers on this one.
Yeah.
This episode is not a spoiler. So, yeah, they came over with Mick Garris, which was
amazing. And that was pretty cool.
Well, this is the fourth year in June that they have put on the Portland Horror Film Festival. It's been going since 2016. Such a labor of love for them, you can tell. Definitely not something they're making a ton of money off of, but they're doing it for the passion of supporting horror film, supporting international horror film, supporting new and upcoming, and especially independent horror film.
Now, when they were up there talking, they gave a lot of little tidbits about themselves because I think because obviously they're also very, very much involved in the Lovecraft Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And didn't they move to Portland from like New Orleans?
Well, when I first moved here to Portland, that was back in 2000, I want to say. I started going to the Lovecraft Festival here in like 2002, 2003, 2004 maybe. Somewhere in there is when I started going to it. And that was before their involvement with it. It went away from here, yes. And I know it went to New Orleans. I'm not sure where else it went, but it left Portland for quite some time. So I do believe it is primarily due to Brian and Gwen that it has come back.
Right, exactly. That's my point.
To Portland, which is enough to do. That's enough to worry and stress and plot and plan over. And then you're just going to start up a second film.
Usually just one person's year.
Exactly.
Let's get it ready. Boom, go. Yeah. But they do this a number of different times.
So no, it's very impressive. Like we said, I've been a couple years now, and this was by far the most kind of the most stuffed into it I've ever seen for this festival. And if it keeps on this trajectory in the years coming, it's going to be even more phenomenal. I mean, without a doubt.
Oh, God, yeah. I can't wait to dive into the movies.
You feeling parched, though?
Yeah, let's dive into the beer. Here really quick too.
So this is a fun pairing.
This is a perfect pairing. This is probably, I think, the one that I think was the most natural and the one that just so fit the whole purpose and vibe of this thing.
Totally. And it's going to be kind of a long trajectory into the explanation of why we're doing this beer, but it all starts with the theater where this film festival takes place, which is our historic Hollywood Theater here in Portland. A lot of towns have that connection to the past via a cinema or a theater. But ours really is just rooted and steeped in Portland history. So this Hollywood Theater started in 1926 and opened for silent films and vaudeville acts. So, I mean,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. This theater started in the impetus of theaters. It was one of a select few theaters that had the ability to project in 70 millimeter to which it still does to this day.
Yes, it does. I remember when they opened the screen up earlier.
Yep, which is just a fantastic and amazingly huge way to watch cinema. So wide. 1,500 seats when this thing first opened, or just under 1,500 seats. And it wasn't split into the three theaters it is now until apparently the 1970s. In the 1990s, they restored the whole thing. And it became a nonprofit, which is the real special and unique twist.
Yeah, because didn't it undergo what a lot of gorgeous old historical buildings and theaters and venues face at some point, and that's, you know, extinction.
Yes.
And of course it rallied and Portland
it had
came together
fallen
and,
into one of those second run theaters, you know, where they weren't showing anything new. They were showing
they were like one step away, one year away from having to show CD porn or something.
Here you are in this just fantastically stylized theater building that's just slowly starting to fall apart, but you don't have the money to fix it. And so that was a real tragedy. And it was a big thing that Portland rallied behind in the 90s when the decision was made to let it go to this other company that was going to just care for it and restore it and make it a hub for people to go to again. And they certainly have succeeded in that. The amount of fun things that the Hollywood Theater does beyond showing first run movies now is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's a tourist place. Definitely one of those things. Like, hey, you want to come to Portland, check out Portland, see the sights? You got to pop in through this place.
Well, and now you don't even have to make it all the way to Portland because they have opened a small Hollywood theater offshoot in the Portland airport.
Yes, they have.
Free to everybody because, again, we're talking nonprofit here and this is just a labor of love. You can walk into this place and it's standing room only. It holds about 20, 30 people, I think. And you can watch short films, again, from all around the world. And it's a great place for local filmmakers to submit their materials and things. And the only restriction is that they have to be okay with it being free.
Yeah, and that's...
Put it on in there.
That's amazing, especially in an airport.
Yeah, you show up to your plane 2 hours early because, you know, you don't know what the line's going to be like. Let's say you whisk right through and now you're like, well, I've got an extra hour and a half.
Yeah, it's a perfect...
Go watch some short films.
Right.
For free. Yeah, for absolutely free. Incredible.
And that, I mean, the nonprofit part of this whole thing is so gorgeous. In fact, they in turn turned around and saved another iconic brick and mortar store.
Absolutely.
You know, we've talked about the glory days when we were younger of going to video stores. And this was even pre-Blockbuster and Hollywood Video.
Yeah, that mom and pop.
The mom and pop.
Had all the posters up everywhere, the cardboard standees.
Well, we have one here called Movie Madness, and it's been around for forevers, and it also was on the way out.
It was, because you know that's what happens now to video and any kind of physical media representation is it's not going to last in this day of streaming and digital collecting and all of those sort of things.
No, but it should be worth noting that Movie Madness, this little hole in the wall, was unlike any video store that was operating back at the time and is operating now.
Absolutely. It's very unique to our
area. It was unique. It's got hard-to-find stuff. It's got TV series. It's got sitcoms. It's got foreign films. I mean, everything that you can possibly imagine, every topic.
That's the thing, is that it literally has everything.
Yeah.
So it opened in 1991. It was opened by a former Hollywood film editor. So here was a guy that was in the know, knew what quality film was, knew how to get his hands on it, and he started putting it in this thing to rent to folks and ran out of room. And I don't even know how many times they've expanded it, but it's made out of three or four buildings that they've tacked together and just gotten so huge. I mean, that was a place that we used to go to just to look, not even to rent a movie, but just to be in awe of the sheer collection. And the collection went beyond movies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, it goes into props, film memorabilia.
They've got a gorgeous window wall there that has like the dress from, I want to say Hepburn, but I don't think I'm right. And the glasses from A Day at Tiffany's. That's
that's Audrey Hepburn.
Audrey Hepburn. Yeah. Thank you. They've got an alien skull or a xenomorph mask. They've got the original building that was used to film the building top, I think, is like the first three top levels of Ghostbusters.
Oh,
that was then also doubled.
Yeah, the rooftop scene and all of that. Yeah.
Not to mention just a collection of incredible masks from B-rated movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my...
It really is something to see. Every wall is memorabilia, yeah. Autographs, signatures, stars that have come through, people that have donated things to his collection. The fact that it was failing and going to go under a couple years back was devastating to anybody that's into movie collecting or just physical media as a whole, let alone that kind of a collection in one place available for the general public.
And that's where Hollywood, the Hollywood Theater came in, and they're like, hey, man, let's put you under our umbrella of nonprofit.
Yeah, huge Kickstarter campaign all through Portland.
Portland came up and said, yeah, no, this can't disappear.
Absolutely exceptional. So I'm happy that that's there. But if you're coming to Portland, if you're in Portland, if you're around Portland, make sure you check out both of these locales for sure. But part of the celebration and kind of spurring interest in and also monetary business to Movie Madness was Ex Novo.
Yeah. Yeah, they came in and they did this incredible collaboration back in July of 2018.
It is my favorite pale ale.
Ex Novo Hollywood Movie Madness Cult Classic Pale Ale. And in fact, I didn't realize it till just now as I'm looking at the bottle here. Mm-hmm. They've got a little blurb on the side where they give you some information about this independent craft here. And you've already covered a lot of it, but it says Movie Madness opened in 1991. And more than 25 years later, this Portland institution is still going strong. Now owned by the nonprofit Hollywood Theater, Movie Madness houses world-class collections of 80,000-plus titles.
Yeah.
It's insane. You know, Blu-ray new releases to VHS classics.
Oh, yeah, no. When I say they have everything, they have everything. It's astounding. So I'm looking at the label of this thing, and I feel it's important to point out some of the cult classic references on it, because we've got a profile of Alfred Hitchcock hanging on the wall on this label. You've got the plant have a name?
I keep calling him Seymour, but that's not it.
But that's who feeds him.
Yeah, that's who feeds him.
But we've got the plant from Little Shop of Horrors on there. Mm-hmm. You have the Maltese Falcon sitting up on the TV next to the VCR.
Now, is that a VCR? Yeah, that's a VCR.
It looks to be.
It's not a Betamax.
I don't think so. No, we're not going crazy up here.
And then, of course, look at the big panel television, the old console television.
With the wood and the fake drawer in it. You've got a Big Lebowski bowling ball.
That's what it is.
That's what I'm thinking anyway.
It's got to be.
And then you've got the lamp from Christmas Story.
Don't forget to mention, that looks like
the... It's a very special award.
Yeah, it is. A very special
one. Oh, on the carpet.
That looks like the carpet from the old hotel there in The Shining.
It certainly is. It's certainly a second beer that came out last year that had the Shining carpet on the label that I know of.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Very interesting. So, wonderful beer by Ex Novo. Yeah. Like I was saying, it is absolutely my favorite pale ale in the Northwest right now.
It's the perfect time for it, too, because it's freaking, 100 degrees out right now?
Yes.
We should be sitting outside drinking and doing this.
No, we should not. No. We should tinfoil the windows, open the freezer, and lay on the floor. That's
nice.
What we should do.
Naked.
I was thinking maybe shorts.
Mm. No, this is really good. It's got a malt
base backbone
flavor.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous on the tongue.
But it hits you with those pines and resins that I am such a fan of.
Right. And then after that, it's like bathed. It's got these malts just bathing in this tub of pine, like you say.
Yeah. It's really, really good. It's one of the most bold and kind of, I don't know, has the most personality of a pale that I've experienced in quite some time. It's a great beer. It's a great cause. It supports, like we said, the Hollywood Theater and Movie Madness. And without that Hollywood Theater, we would have no Portland Horror Film Festival. So special thanks also should go out to them just for their willingness to do all of these wonderful events.
I love the fact that these companies, these institutions have come together, and independent companies, and said, hey, we need to save ourselves and each other.
Yeah.
And they've made it happen successfully. And now we got a venue that allows us to see things like the Portland Horror Film Festival and many, many, many more.
Oh, and the Kung Fu nights that they have there are so awesome. And then doing the bingo nights where they'll throw on some cheesy B-rated stuff and give you a bingo card. I mean, it's a fun activity to do there almost every night of the week.
Yeah, and they still play current movies, like Godzilla King of the Monsters is in right
now. The while yeah, there
that
now.
Was funny. Yeah. While these independent films were going on in one of the other theaters, you could hear when Godzilla, you know,
yeah.
came to screen and there was a slight rumbling in the background. It was awesome.
It added to it, I think.
Well, should we dive into these?
I think we should. So, yeah, it was a lot, and we're going to tell you about a couple of our favorite things just to kind of send you down the road and in the direction that we liked. But we're talking about, you know, like I said, 40-plus short films that ran from anywhere from 1 minute up to, I think the longest was like 28 minutes, yeah. something like that, mm-hmm. I want to say.
Well, and can you imagine when Gwen oh my God, I just blanked.
Brian,
thank you. We're up there. They were talking about how them and, you know, a panel had to review like 130 plus movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had to narrow it down here. I had a hard enough time just picking like my top five out of these 40s.
Well, I couldn't imagine. I talked to them a little bit about it last year after one of the nights, and they were saying, yeah, they get a ton of selections, and then they have people that they, you know, trust their opinions and their tastes and things, and they give each of them a huge block, and then they weed down that huge block to the ones they think are the best, and then all of those come to Brian and Gwen, and they make those final decisions from that. So it's a big process.
Yeah, and they're not getting paid for this, I would imagine. This is all on their own time, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So we had six feature films. Let's bust through a couple of those and just kind of what it was about, because the amazing things about having feature films is that we're not talking about, you know, they just raided their DVD shelf and pulled off six things that they thought we would like. These are world premieres. In some of the cases, these are films that have released nowhere else.
Yeah, like The Funeral, for instance.
Yeah.
It released here first.
We are the only ones to have seen right. this film.
And even though, but it was filmed in China. It's mm-hmm. a Chinese film, and they didn't release it there.
Still stuck yet. In their rating / approval kind of board system, however it works over there. So yeah, they haven't even seen it where it was made. And actually, the main actress came over. She actually lives in LA now, but she flew into Portland.
Oh, and she was lovely.
Really awesome.
Yeah.
And she was saying that this was the first time she's seen it. She's only seen dailies prior to it screening in this film festival. So, yeah, this is fresh stuff and big name stuff.
And it exposes you to a whole different industry, a whole different way that they do things in foreign films and other countries and things like that. It was an eye-opener for me, especially some of her approval things that they were talking about.
We got to see Fangoria's new film. Satanic Panic, that stars Rebecca Romijn. Awesome.
Yeah.
I think truly awesome.
If you and I are doing like a top, you know, top two or top mm-hmm. one out of the six premieres.
Sure.
If we're picking the top one, I think we're probably in agreement.
I fight between that and our Nightmare Cinema that we were treated to.
Then you and I are on the exact same page.
I would have a hard time deciding which one I enjoyed more, but I enjoyed them both for very different reasons. So it's
a tough one.
It really is.
Yeah. I've definitely got Satanic Panic up as my top one because, and I found this as a theme this year, the ones that had humor in it really took me.
Yeah. Almost all my shorts. Yeah. I found that I really loved when I was flipping through it. I went, oh, these were all the funny ones that I just laughed and laughed and laughed and was just also grossed out somewhat.
Yeah. And
it's perfect.
So well done. Not just cheesy. There was some cheese there, but it made sense.
On purpose. Yeah, it was most definitely on purpose. I mean, I love Jerry O'Connell's appearance in Satanic Panic. That was
I was not quite expecting celebrities. I don't know why. I just wasn't quite expecting it.
But, well, and I knew they threw up there, you know, oh, this is Rebecca Romijn's new, you know, film she's doing with Fangoria. And when you see that kind of thing, you go, she's going to be in 3 minutes of it at the beginning.
Yeah.
And that's it. You'll never see her again. But she was literally in the film, start to finish.
Yeah, she's rocking the whole thing.
And did an excellent job.
Hey, one does not just simply give Satan 3 minutes of their time.
No, I guess that's true.
Yeah, they have.
He's going to demand a little more.
He's going to demand some more.
But really awesome film, directed by Chelsea Stardust, who I think is going to go on and do some amazing, amazing things coming up here.
Yeah, if this was her sense of direction and like, writing recognition and, you know, pacing. She's got
Oh, yeah. Some great reveals.
She's got some chops on her.
Comedic and kind of sinister and just really, really good stuff. Thinking along the lines of like The Babysitter that hit Netflix a couple years back with just that over-the-top comedy, over-the-top gore, all blended into a wonderfully 80s throwback style film.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought the gore was just enough. It wasn't too much.
For sure. And when it did go too much, it went so cornball too much that you weren't, you know, it wasn't going to offend anybody or gross anybody out. It was just so goofy when she's pulling the guy's intestines out to read his intestines through the.
Yeah, so cool. And, it, just, you know, and not to say that it's not like a an Evil Dead gore, you know, it's not like that extreme, but there's just enough in there.
It was pretty good. It was really good. Nightmare Cinema was ranked right up there. Nightmare Cinema, this was the Portland premiere of Nightmare Cinema. We had the last showing of it during its run around the country and kind of its preview run until it gets actually released on physical media at the end of this month. I want to say June 21st, 22nd. This is the new film brought to us through the genius and the talent of Mr. Mick Garris. Who is responsible for Masters of Horror?
Oh yeah,
Fear itself.
Stephen
King's The Stand.
Yeah, partner brings Stephen King's books to life.
Oh
man.
Sure, yeah, Sleepwalker's film back in the '80s. Oh my gosh, he's just done so many things. What the Fly Part 2, Critters 2. He has certainly run the gambit of horror and brought us some amazing things. Oh, The Shining, of course.
Yeah, let's not forget that one, the television version.
I have always known him best from Masters of Horror.
Yeah.
Because at the time I was writing online reviews, those were just being released. So they were getting sent to me, you know, at the tune of one or two a week. And so I was able to just rip right through them and was able to amass the whole collection and go back and revisit them a ton of times. But
well, that
what
must
a great
been
idea.
Pretty cool for you then, because I didn't realize that. But that must have been pretty cool for you to be able to not only have a meet and greet with him.
Sure.
But actually get to chill on a couch right next to him and rap with him and his buddy about
things.
It was
pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was really, really
I mean, that
neat.
Was the most casual, like, hey, we're just in my, you know.
Yeah.
Back living room.
Went and grabbed a seat, and then before I knew it, I was sharing a couch with Mr. Mick Garris and bouncing questions.
We'll have to try to get some of those pictures on the website.
I think
something.
They're all that stuff has already been shared.
That's
so
cool.
You should be able to find all of that on there from our weekend.
I just want to take a minute and jump back to Satanic Panic really quick, because yeah. I did want to mention the actress, the main actress, the young girl, the pizza driver, Haley Griffith, I think it is.
Okay.
I think she's already done some work, but man, I think she's going to be a big upcoming star.
Yeah.
I
she
think
nailed this.
Yeah. Because she was incredible in that. So I just wanted to
most definitely
keep that name in the back of your heads.
Absolutely. So Nightmare Cinema kind of follows right along the lines of Mick Garris's Masters of Horror, which was let's get together some of the best horror directors we can find this time around with an eye specifically to make it international from all different countries, all different voices. And let's give them carte blanche to just make a film that they want to make,
bring
and we're going to put it together into an anthology.
Best in the industry, and let them just do what they do.
Absolutely. So he got, Ryuhei Kitamura. I don't know how you say his first name. I probably just mangled it, but there you go. He's the gentleman that brought us Versus. And he also brought us Midnight Meat Train, which we've featured here.
Which was very good.
Yeah. Mr. Joe Dante made a film for this. Mr. David Slade. Mick Garris himself made one. And Alejandro Bruges, who did One of the Dead.
Yeah.
Also did one.
I like what Mick Garris said at the beginning when he came up on stage and he's like, hey, this is going to happen. He kept all of the directors off credit until the very end of the movie. So
yes.
That you didn't give away who did what.
Yes, and challenged us with guessing while we watched it, who we thought did each film, of which I got one of four that I guessed on correctly. So it really is surprising when you just let someone go with what they'll choose to make. It might not be like anything you've seen them make before.
Yeah.
And I think that was really cool.
It's not, and I love the idea that he carried with this this fact that there's this cinema and it's sort of a haunted cinema, I guess, or some kind of, It has a projectionist who's played by Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
Who kind of draws people in.
Yeah, where people go for kind of their final curtain
call. Yeah, it kind of forces them to see their deepest, darkest, whatever, and then he collects their souls at the end of it. And it's like, you know, a final judgment or something.
Sure.
I thought that was a cool little add-in rather than just an Elvira or a Crypt Keeper or a, you know, whatever.
Yeah, like with John Carpenter's Body Bags, where you come back to him and he throws a couple witticisms at you and gets kind of goofy, and then you go right back to the next story.
Yeah.
Which I like, too. I'm perfectly fine with a Creep Show or a Creep Show 2 or whatnot. You know, Tales from the Dark Side. But I do like it when they have a wraparound, something to tie it together, and something that kind of gives it a thread.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that any one of them really disappointed.
No.
I think because they had different levels of either humor or dread or suspense or whatever. I think that's why it only slightly puts it underneath Satanic Panic for me, because Satanic Panic was like this one cult roller coaster ride from start to finish. I didn't have to readjust or anything. So,
yeah, absolutely. It was kind of fun watching the Nightmare Cinema amongst all the shorts, because you're seeing, you're seeing Hollywood horror masters do their version of a short film right as you're seeing all of these independent, I mean, literally people in their bedroom on their computer, people shooting things with their cell phone. You're getting to see their takes next to Hollywood, and you start to realize there's some crazy, amazing voices coming up that haven't hit yet, because some of these shorts are right on par.
Oh, sure. When you look at this is the horror cinema, you know, that's a really refined, you know, we got Hollywood behind it. We got the best, but they've been doing this for a while. So it's very polished and very, you know, dialed in. And then you watch these independents and you can see a wide range of that, wide range of being very young, not dialed in, not polished. But then some of these come up and they surprise you and they're like, holy crap, that's spot on, man, from start to finish. Oh, yeah. These guys have nailed it.
Yeah, I'd pay a ticket to see this guy's film tonight.
In fact, there's one movie, it was called Look Twice.
Oh, yes.
That I thoroughly enjoyed to the point, and it was a very short one. Thoroughly enjoyed it so much that I found myself going, wait, I want to know more. I want to see more. I want to know what this story is. I want to know why that thing is there. Yeah. What happened to the dude? I was like genuinely like, this has got to go somewhere.
Totally.
Just because I want to know more.
That's what I love about horror shorts, is that when a horror short ends and it leaves me wanting more, I'm totally stoked. Because what I really want is to see more works from that person.
Yes.
To see what other cool little ideas they've come up with. When I'm watching a film and I'm left wanting more, either A, you're trying to hook me into a franchise, or or B, you didn't put everything in the film that probably should have been in the film.
Right, yeah.
But on a short, yeah, I love that feeling at the end where you're like, oh, no, don't stop. Let's keep going. I think that's masterwork when you do it that way.
In terms of the feature films, definitely Satanic Panic, Nightmare Cinema is fantastic. A couple of runners-up that I really liked that I thought had a great premise, probably could have refined part of the storyline or gone a different direction that I thought it should have, you know, but who am I, was if anybody gets the chance to go check out The Depraved and Reborn. Reborn, very cool, because you get to see Barbara Crampton, you know, back up doing her
heck
business.
Yeah.
And that was super cool. But those are both ones that I'd recommend as, you know, kind of runners up, follows up, and check them out.
I really did enjoy Reborn. It was, you know, it was something that, you know, if I had rented it, I wouldn't have been disappointed for sure. I mean, it was quality film, definitely had some inspirations from other films, Firestarter, Carrie.
Yeah, it had the Carrie, the Firestarter, the Shocker kind of vibe.
Very, it was very X-Files episode-y.
Yeah.
But filmed for, you know.
And I like the little twistiness about it. Like, is she or isn't she, you know?
Definitely. The funeral was great. From China. It was a little interesting the way it ended, and then us getting to find out why. It ends in a very tropey way, let's say. And when questioned about it, Kunju Li, the actress, let us know that, as you referred to earlier, in China, there are some pretty crazy restrictions on what you can and can't have. And it turns out you can't have ghosts in a film China.
But yet this was a ghost story.
Which is funny because my brain immediately went to, what about Chinese ghost story, which I used to love so much.
Yeah.
But these are new restrictions and apparently it's getting worse. Censorship is getting tighter and tighter in China. It's not relaxing. Nothing is becoming more open-minded, by far the opposite.
So much so that didn't she say she recorded like 3 or 4 different endings?
They recorded many different endings.
Knowing.
Yeah. And she said that the one they chose was the one that she called the word safe. She said that's the safe one. And when questioned on that, she said that it can probably be released. That movie will probably be able to air in China.
And you're right, because it was tropey. And what it did is it said, hey, I'm going to tell this story about these things that currently are being censored. But at the end, I'm going to be able to explain them away or dismiss them away.
Yes.
To get past the censorship and be able to tell
it's kind of 99% a did it or didn't it kind of a thing ending so that they could go to the board and say, well, did it or didn't it? Maybe.
And she got she said she got lucky or she was surprised because it went right through. It passed right through. I think she had mentioned.
Yeah, well, I know it's still sitting in some kind of.
Or maybe it was that just for here. I don't know. No. It was you got to get 2 licenses.
Oh yes,
one for filming.
Yep.
And then one for screening.
You have to get permission just to make it based on what you tell them it's going to be, and then one to have it actually go anywhere once you've made it.
And that's the one that she's hung up on right now.
But it's this kind of information. It's this kind of things that we had never known. Like in China, you can't have an affair. You can't have an affair in a movie if the person doesn't go back to their spouse or boyfriend or whatever. The affair can never win or it's not allowed to air.
That was her words in China.
Yeah, it can't win. We learned that – what was the other thing she was telling us? Oh, you cannot have more than 2 exes.
Yeah, you can't have more than 2 boyfriends. So a current one and 2 girlfriends.
You know, we couldn't have a Scott Pilgrim versus the World because it would only have 2 fights and we'd be done.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, really interesting, really, I mean, regressive, you know, ideas and things in Chinese film.
But you're not going to find this stuff out just, you know, watching a movie on the Netflix.
No, you got to go to Portland Horror Film Festival.
You got to go to Portland Horror Film Festival.
Well, and that's the great thing is that after all these feature films that we just talked about, one more that we should throw out a bone to, Stay Out, Stay Alive was really awesome by Dean Yerk. He is a digital artist and put together a really effective blend of cinematography and computer graphic, which isn't something you hear a lot from us, which were the anti-computer graphic guys. But it really worked to set the tone and the mood for his film. Really cool tale of greed and people succumbing to their...
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Plus some of the back story of, you know, how they built the props. You know, who would have thought that whole mine that they were in was really just a trench with some...
Yeah, dug in a backyard.
Yeah, dug in a backyard, a trench and some... tarp thrown over the top and you know, it was very impressive.
But it's really cool hearing all of these things, whether it's about the filming in China or how they dug that mine out, from the voices of the people that made the decisions and were involved in it, more than just reading things on IMDb as we always bring you guys. Oh yeah, we found out these 800 factoids, we're just going to regurgitate you because we think they're cool.
Yeah,
this was really cool being able to watch 10 shorts, have the lights come back on, and then watch 5 or 6 of those directors or cast members or whatever walk up onto that stage and then just answer your questions and share with you their stories and experiences.
It's like the beta IMDb.
Yeah.
Factor.
Yeah.
It's like we could be...
You heard it here first.
Yeah. We heard this stuff from them right now.
That's right.
We could get on IMDb, type in those... factoids, and then a year later review the movie and reread our own facts.
Whoa, Inception.
But yeah, man, you're just not going to get that kind of stuff, that kind of experience, unless you seek out, if not the Portland Horror Film Festival. You know, you gotta get out in your own place.
You gotta go to the Portland Horror Film Festival.
I mean, I get you. I'm 100% support that. Fly your ass down here.
Amazing how many people did.
Oh, what it was that they asked that question. Who came the farthest?
I think Georgia.
Georgia
was the farthest, but there were people all over that theater that had bussed in, gone on 3 to 4 day car trips to get here. People that flew in from all over the West Coast and beyond. People down from Canada.
I personally think she won coming from China, but.
She lives in LA now.
Oh, she lives in LA. That's right. Doesn't count. Let's talk about some shorts. Are you ready?
Let's talk about a few. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was 40 of these things, and I would say There was about 40 good ones.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
I picked five top shorts. I picked a couple of runners up and then a butt ton
of
honorable mentions.
Bounce back and forth for a second here and discuss some of these and what we loved about them. And I'll bet we also meet in the middle on several of these too.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Why don't you go first? What would you consider your top short?
Oh, shit.
If you're set up that way.
For sheer originality, that alone, something that I've never seen anyone else even attempt to do or try to do or have the same theme of, Finley.
Oh, ding, 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 ding.
Is that your top?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Top all the way.
So Finley was a 25-minute short from J. Zachary Thurman, and it is his twist on the killer doll device. Whether a killer doll for you is the ventriloquist dummy from the old Twilight Zones, whether it's Chucky, you know, whether it's Annabelle, whatever your killer doll is, you're not ready for Finley.
No, you're not. In fact, I remember going to this and thinking to myself, it's not a horror fest unless there's a ventriloquist dummy short.
You were very excited when you saw that. Yeah.
And I was very excited about it because that's the OG of this whole doll thing. Right?
See, and I got to tell you, I was not excited when I saw it and they opened the lid of that case, you know, that they find in the attic of this home, these mm-hmm. college kids find, and there's a dummy in there. I was like, oh no, seen it.
I expected the exact same thing. I was like, okay, so we're going to have like this doll come alive. He's going to turn his head around full, you know, people are going to die mysteriously.
Sure.
Whatever.
Yeah. He's going to talk. His eyes are going to move. Yeah. You know, someone's going to wind up dead. Someone else is going to get blamed for it. It was the doll all the time.
Somebody's going to be possessed by the doll in the sense that he's now like the doll and the doll is the real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you haven't seen it.
You have not seen this. There has not been anything out there like this.
No, not at all.
In fact, I thought it was super cool. Not giving anything away here. But when these people buy this house, they find that there's a bunch of stuff left upstairs.
Yeah.
And the dude, at the time he seemed like kind of a frat dude. He was like, oh, yeah. Look at all this cool stuff, man. And they started going through it. And then it pans over to this box that's nailed shut. And one mm-hmm. of the girls say, hey, here's a box that's nailed shut. And we're like, oh, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And when they crack that sucker open, there's this ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to tell you how the ventriloquist dummy was represented, but sure. It was the type of representation where I said to myself, nail that fucker shut.
Yeah.
Nail it back up. You don't right. even want to go any further with
nail
this.
Nail it. Pack up all your stuff again. It move somewhere else.
Immediately had me.
Yeah.
Had me hooked on that. But then, I was thinking, oh, it's just going to be the same old, same old.
Sure.
Yeah, no. Finley, fuck. Seek it out, man. Top list.
Absolutely. It is... It is guaranteed to make you laugh for
God,
a solid
25. I so want to talk about.
Well, we could talk about a little bit of it. So Finley is what you think. He's, he's a murderous doll.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna off these kids, and he's very creative.
Oh yeah,
he goes after some toasters. He uses knives. He uses nails. He uses a crossbow. He uses marbles. Going straight home alone. He tries, plastic bag, all sorts of stuff.
Shit, yeah.
But I think what we can say about it, and then we'll cut, is that Finley,
he's challenged.
He needs to work on his delivery.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we'll leave it right there. Anyways, yeah, super, super brilliant. Great idea. It's going to do what all short films do. It's going to tour the circuit for a while. You're not going to be able to see it because they want people's first reaction to be when it shows up in a film festival like this one and gets rated and voted on. But write this down. Put it in a notepad. Stick it on your computer monitor and keep an eye out for J. Zachary Thurman's Finley.
Oh, yeah. It's going places.
Okay. Well, there was one of mine. What do you got?
So for my second top short... again, it's a satanic influenced cult and sort of influenced, practice movie.
Okay.
But again, brilliantly riddled with humor.
Starting to sound like we have the same second.
Maybe we have a monkey paw.
We got a monkey paw. We got a monkey's paw.
Oh, so good. So yes. Well done.
What's funny is when I went back and remembered them, I went, how odd that like two of the longer shorts wound up being my favorites. Maybe it's just because they have more material. And then I look, and We Got a Monkey's Paw was only nine minutes.
Yeah.
They packed another 25 minutes of humor into only 9 minutes this time, and I don't know how they did it.
I was thinking that same thing as I was reviewing this, because I noticed that Finley was 24 minutes, and I was thinking that was the perfect amount of time. I mean, they told so much story in just the right amount of time, but then...
Oh, my goodness,
I was like, oh, Monkey Paw must have been 20 minutes or so.
That's what I was thinking.
Nope.
Yep. Less than 10.
Yep.
And that counts credits, by the way. All these have credits, so whatever numbers you're throwing out there are minus a couple minutes, usually.
Sure.
But this one also plays on old tropes.
Yeah, you got yourself this monkey paw, and it grants a certain amount of wishes. And as you can imagine, so wishes can go wrong.
This one started out kind of with that Friday the 13th, the series kind of a vibe. You know, these people have amassed a collection of things you shouldn't have.
Yeah. I don't know if it was the boyfriend, right? I guess?
Yeah, it was his place. Yeah, so. It was a roommate, but it was his place, and... The female who was looking to move out because she's had enough of this guy's hijinks.
Yeah, because every day he'd come up like, hey, look, I got a Ouija board.
He's got Ouija boards. He's got a possessed doll, off the internet. Yeah. He's got a mirror that fully has a ghost in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, a demon box. all these things that he collects because he thinks they're super cool, and he's been driving her absolutely
bonkers. Yeah, he wants to play with them, and she's like, fuck this shit, I'm out.
Until he shows up with a monkey's paw, which grants you wishes. And I love, and someone in the audience actually made this point to the filmmaker that it was his favorite part, and it was genius, that they say, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but the guy's like, you know, I got this monkey's paw, and she's like, what does it do? And he goes, it grants you wishes, but they always go wrong, or you know, something like that. Yeah. And they're still like, yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
I love it.
Another one that takes you through in a very short amount of time in a very entertaining, fast-paced, funny way of all of these wishes perfectly worded, but yet you see how the cosmic energies, the cosmic powers that be can twist that shit.
Oh, yeah. And it goes from 0 to 100 in nothing flat with how crazy their wishes get, including... time traveling, making copies of themselves, and all sorts of other great things that really make this a hilarious, hilarious short. Again, you know, it's got some zombie action. It's got some mayhem. It's got all these haunted and cursed things, but not a lot of horror, not a lot of terror or scare.
No. There's even a couple times when they show what the end result of their wish is. They don't tell you what the wish is. They just show them diving behind a couch and there's flames everywhere. And they go, well, that one didn't work.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that brings me to my number three, because my number three goes to actual scare and terror.
I think you and I are going to be pretty spot on at least the top three.
And not horror movie scare.
No.
Not masked killer in the dark. Not, you know, chainsaw wielding maniac. This is everyday actual fright for me. My third one I wrote down was 3 days.
Ah, okay. Okay. We got...
Cool.
We got a...
So 3 days is 11 minutes. Oh, we should say We Got a Monkey's Paw is by Aaron Pagniano and Zach Ogle. So again, write those down. Go out. Find them on social media. Follow them. See what they're doing. Watch their other stuff, because these are the next up-and-comers. 3 days. 3 days is 11 minutes long. It's by Julie Charbit. She's actually here from the Northwest. And her 3 days is a story about three women who have gone on a camping trip and are hidden up in their tent on night one and are becoming frightened because of the solitude, because of the noises that are occurring outside, because of their own preconceived notions of what could be coming and what could be about to happen. And they are taking turns becoming scared themselves and trying to reassure each other that there's nothing out there, all while we just kind of sink deeper and deeper into what they must be experiencing, because what if they're right?
Yeah.
And all of this written from away, but handled so well. It does not beat you in the face with any kind of a message or any kind of a, you know, social statement. But that's exactly what it's making.
And it has just enough real conversation and humor in it.
Yeah.
It's not a humorous film by any means.
Yeah.
But it's as if though you and I went camping, mm-hmm. and we heard some freaky shit out,
sure.
and how we would crack some jokes to maybe lighten the mood.
Exactly.
It was very, very...
But then take out the facts that we're guys.
Yeah.
And insert the fact that these are three ladies, and look at it from their point of view and from the things that they fear, such as walking to their car alone mm-hmm. at night, leaving a club, you know?
I don't know if I mentioned this before, but you hit on something very, very significant, which I hate to say it, man. I'm a big guy. I've had two times when women have told me some very interesting things. Mm-hmm. I had a gal friend from New York come stay in Portland for a while, and we'd go out, and we were walking around downtown. It was like 12 o'clock at night, downtown Portland here, and I got turned around. I couldn't figure out where my car was, so I asked somebody walking by, hey, do you know where so-and-so is? And she grabbed my arm and pulled me away from him. I'm like, what are you doing? And she says, what are you doing? You don't talk to people. I mean, we're out here in the middle of the night, you know, and she looked scared and vulnerable. And I was mm-hmm. like, and I was just blown away by that. I was like, of course you do. And she says, you never talk to anybody like that where I'm from.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, holy crap. And then last year I had to take my truck in, get the engine replaced, and I had to get on our MAC station and ride the train back and forth to work for a while. And sometimes I'd get out of work at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. And I was telling my my girlfriend, yeah, I had a weird night the other last night because there was five or six guys that were, you know, obviously a little rough around the edges. And I made sure I had, you know, my hand where it needed to be. And mm-hmm. I just kind of kept an eye on them. They really made me nervous. And she kind of said, well, that's funny because it only takes one guy to make women nervous.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, holy shit.
Well, and that's the power of this film is it's yeah. taking a situation where you or I, you know, may or may not think about anything occurring, you know, and putting it into an entirely different viewpoint that we can't really understand, but making it really easy for us to feel it.
Yeah.
And it's chilling. It's very eerie. There is an amazing piece where she works with the plot device of this in it, which I can't even talk about.
No, and that's the beauty of these shorts is yeah. that they do have to throw in real, real meaningful stuff you can chew on, mm-hmm. but then throw you a twist at the end, throw yeah. you a different direction. And it's tough to talk about.
It was the only short in the whole festival where it ended with a, cause we applaud after everyone shows. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that they, you know, ask you to do right up front, because there are so many filmmakers in the audience with you at this festival. I mean, 10, 15 a day
yeah.
filmmakers. And they ask you to applaud right after each one. This was the only one that had moments of silence when the credits hit.
Yeah.
Before the applause
and
happened.
And there was a couple of
everyone
like...
was stuck processing.
Yeah.
And going, because it's powerful. It was a yeah. good one. I really liked it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'll admit, when I'm out camping and it's just me, I go there.
Yeah.
I do. It's probably ridiculous, but I think about, hey, what if?
Well, that's the thing. It's ridiculous for us. Again. And it might not be so ridiculous for someone yeah. else that has a whole lifetime of different experiences.
Yeah, super well done.
Yeah. So what was the one that kind of had the same vibe that you were feeling?
I honestly, I don't get dark until later on in the list, but yeah. mine was Vinyl Destination.
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely.
Fucking so hilarious.
Yeah.
So hilarious. It's just, let's just say that these guys get a record. It's the Eagles, but...
Yeah,
he pronounced it the Eagles.
Eagles, yeah. Because
and they're, you know, like,
because he
of a,
has no idea what it really is. He yeah. just wants to sell it on eBay and
yeah.
found some limited record somewhere.
And as we all know, was it the Eagles that did Hotel California?
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody knows that's about, you know, ghosts and the hotel and dying and never coming back and shit like that. So mm-hmm. so suddenly they say, well, let's play this record. And the first lyrics in it are, you have to play this record backwards.
Yeah, just over and over again. Yeah, you're playing it the wrong way. Play it backwards. You're playing it the wrong way.
So, you know, naturally, because they're kind of like a Shaun of the Dead kind of duo.
They totally are.
You know, and they do. And the messages come clear and clearly come through. But it's stuff like, you must now vacuum the floor.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first message out of it is, you have now invited Satan into your life.
That's right. That's right.
That's
and they're
the
like, holy
first
shit.
Words they hear. And so they, you know, slap it off to get rid of it.
And then it's like, now vacuum the floor or die.
Yeah. And it, Yeah, it takes them down a whole road of having to do ridiculous things. Because it'd be really easy to be like, you know, you'll sacrifice this or cut yourself or do this.
Not at all what you would think.
Super bizarre, really hilarious things that this record makes these guys do.
Yeah, and they had a great solution on how to fool Satan at the end. I loved it.
They totally did. also, really cool one. Only 7 minutes. I mean, the amount of stuff you can pack into a few minutes makes me think, like, A, I waste a lot of my day not making short films.
Duh. I wanted to leave making a short film.
Right. And B, just I don't have this kind of creativity to put that much awesome stuff into such a short time.
Well, the director was Daniel Cummings, and the cast was Nate James Bake, and then Dan Cummings. So obviously, brother.
The same guy. No, same guy. He was the one that was in it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Daniel, when he was up on stage, he was talking about it. I'm pretty sure you were buying a beer.
I think I was.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, he talked about being in it and kind of the vibe of the whole thing, and it's great. It's super funny, and again, find it when you can.
I turn a little dark on the fourth one. How about you?
Mine is a little bit, yeah. It's the last one I wrote down because I didn't want to have an 8-hour podcast and make people listen to 40 reviews of short films that they may or may not find soon. My fourth one and the last one I chose was a 15-minute piece by Drew McDonald called Here There Be Monsters.
Ooh, the acting in that was so good.
And that's what I have written down right here. Amazing actress.
Yes.
So this young girl, Savannah Foran McDaniel, is an Australian film. It was put together, like I said, by Drew McDonald. And it is, well, let me see. What did I write down? Some bullying leads a girl into a terrifying night of fighting for her life and herself is how I, when I wrote in the dark.
Yeah. fair enough. But the fact that she's what, 12, 13, maybe 14?
Yeah, somewhere in there. You know,
somewhere in middle school. And she's a young actress and I'm terrified for her.
Powerful stuff, yeah.
I feel her pain.
So she goes through a whole thing of bullying and, I mean, some pretty severe bullying.
And that's when it's super selling, like when she super sells it.
Exactly. And then finds herself kind of abandoned in a school bus yard because she hides away on this bus and just, you know,
falls asleep. And
yeah, basically gets left behind in the school bus yard, at which point she is terrorized by a whole new terror with some really cool creature effects. I don't mind saying creature because the effects are really cool.
Very practical effects. Guy doing up a you know, really nice suited monster.
And you kind of get the idea that this monster that's coming after her, and this is, of course, in the night following while I'm thinking about it falling to sleep, but I kind of get the idea that that monster was a representation of, you know, she had just about given up and this was do or die time. Are you going to give up because of this bullying? And she fights off against this monster, discovers her strength, and takes it places that the film goes.
Yeah.
But really scary in a real world way, and then really scary in a monstery way,
right?
And then all wrapped together at the end, I thought was really good.
Yeah, and a very powerful ending too.
Very much so.
Yeah. Well, I went dark too with The Monster.
Oh yeah,
and that was just absolutely fantastic.
Really clever.
I thought it was very funny at first because here's this dad, not coddling his young boy, who's a afraid as he's going to bed. He's afraid of the dark and monsters under the bed. And his dad's like, oh, yeah, I had monsters under the bed. And, you know, this shit terrified me, too. And, you know, he was totally, like, telling the kid, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like, coddle you.
Yeah, I'm not going to coddle you. I'm not any.
Yeah, my dad told me these same stories when I was young. Yeah.
Yeah, he totally was, like, the worst parent in the world. And then you, you know, oh, he talked about the skeletal woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he puts these thoughts of some kind of creature.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really trying to struggle with how to tell this story here.
But he puts this in this story. He puts these horrible thoughts of this like crazy monster into his son's head, which he, of course, as soon as the lights get turned out and dad goes off to bed and the door closes, he begins to see.
Yes.
So we go through that whole experience with him.
And he starts screaming and the dad comes in and instead of saying, oh, there, it'll be okay. He's like, well, you know, you got to face this shit or not, dude. You know, I'm like, what the fuck?
My dad did the same thing to me. And that's how I became who I am today.
Right.
You know, which is
What I loved about this, and maybe you pulled something different from it, is that the monster, mm-hmm. as the title of the movie, wasn't so much about the actual monsters that this kid was imagining.
No.
It was very much about the dad and what he was creating.
Yes.
Yeah. And another wonderful little stabby in the side twist.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and these were all audience favorites too. And you can tell by the level of applause and people standing up and giving them ovations and things like this. But all of these were extremely powerful films. Let's run some really quick, like 30 seconds down a couple of the ones we thought were awesome.
Absolutely.
The Hide Behind from Parker Finn.
100%. Neat spin on a really cool effect.
Yes. Well, and that's what I thought too. And when I typed it in to try to see if he had a presence online, I found out that the Hide Behind is actually a legend of lumberjacks that goes all the way back to the 1920s and is registered in several like creature cryptozoology Ooh. Kind of things. The Hide Behind is a thing. Ooh. That people have feared, and this guy, I guess, just represented it. But when we first saw it, we were just like, what is this business? So I went down a whole other rabbit hole. But check out The Hide Behind, Parker Finn.
Yep.
There's one from me.
Check out Smiley Death Face.
Oh, absolutely.
Your typical, you know, serial killer, like Stranger Calls and Scream, where, you know, you're being stalked by this, you know, person that you can't see and he's terrorizing you, but through your cell phone and only through emojis.
Yes. Yeah.
Fucking brilliant. Because when you saw those emojis pop up.
Yeah.
You read the words, man. You knew what was going
to
happen. You
and
knew what
he was saying. And the entire thing is sent to you via emoji. There is no spoken word in it other than a backing track of what's on TV. That's the only words you hear in it, which is very creative.
Yeah. This poor girl gets this random, you know, emoji,
you
know, from this number she doesn't know. And it proceeds to then manipulate her into not screaming, not talking, not calling for the police, none of this stuff, and to follow these directions while threatening, you know, consequences if she doesn't, all through smiley faces and, you know, other shit. Brilliant.
Witches Get Stitches by Matthew K. Robinson. You can't help but laugh. It's only a 4-minute short, and it takes to task the Hollywood love of having people cut their own hands open to take blood bonds or blood oaths or to show how tough they are or to do those things. And it says, this is probably how that would actually go.
When I was
super awesome,
8 years old, I had a best friend. We decided to become blood brothers.
Mm-hmm.
We found this bottle, broken bottle, in the street. He fucking sliced his hand, man, just like you see in Hollywood, just straight down the palm. And he's like, okay, you're next. I was like, no. I couldn't do it. So it hit home with me, and especially what the director said.
That's really funny.
Like, you see all these people cutting their hands and their fingers and all this stuff all the time, but none of them ever react to it.
Mm-mm.
It was brilliant.
Yep. What you got? What's next? What's some of the ones you want to...
Fucking Selfie Junkie, the shortest one there.
Yeah, 1 minute.
1 minute. They do this really great presentation of this.
Actually, 2 minutes. There was one shorter. And the one shorter is the next one I'm going to mention. But it was 2 minutes.
Oh, was it 2 minutes?
Sorry,
okay, I thought it was 60. In this 2 minute time, they show this girl coming home from work, getting terrorized by, you know, your typical shower hiding serial killer. And then she does something, I think. Mm-hmm. Probably is pretty obvious in the title, but they don't show the title till the end because you're going like, what the fuck is she
doing?
Like,
what is happening?
Is she traumatized?
Right now?
Is she calling 911? What's up? And then they do the title and you're like, oh shit.
Yep.
Fucking laughter everywhere.
Oh my goodness. My last one that I really need to talk about, although there's so many more that were just fantastic, but you know, if you want to see him, you want to hear about him, show up next year, go to the festival. Last one, 1 minute long. All I'm going to say is the title. Doesn't need anything more than that. Again, look for it online. The Only Thing I Love More Than You is Ranch Dressing by Sidney Clora Brofman.
Yes.
That's it.
I was telling everybody at work about that one.
Yeah.
I was telling them the whole show.
Really, really awesome.
Yeah. I would recommend that you check out The Darlings.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Wretch.
Okay.
And damn it, my mind's drawing a blank on there was three or four sort of werewolf themed movies there.
Yeah.
So those are really cool. But The Culprit, where the guy sees the photograph.
Oh, yeah.
While he's in the bathroom. Another really amazing spin on things.
Yeah, the culprit, Sean Yu Lin. The Darlings was Liz Tappish. And Wretch was by Keir Siewert, S-I-E-W-E-R-T.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And then I mean, also,
and we could go on for
hours. Oh, we could. I do want to give props to at least two of the filmmakers that chose animation and or stop motion.
Yes.
They did horror theme with, you know, this really demanding, disciplined media to tell their story. Very cool.
Baron was a stop motion. I thought that the Leishu,
Cemetery Song was also.
That was also awesome. Uh-huh. And I actually connected with that band on Instagram, just telling them how much I loved their song.
Oh, nice.
The Leshy.
The Leshy,
L-E-S-H-I-Y. That one was another one that is worth mentioning. They filmed entirely via candlelight and firelight.
Right, no prop lighting.
Really awesome, like late 1800s kind of vibe.
Now, I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention what Heather Langenkamp's favorite one
was. That's right. Oh, and we haven't even talked about, you know, all the other stuff we did with Mick Garris.
I figured we'd wrap up with that.
Okay. But yes, Heather Langenkamp was chosen as this year's Bloody Judge. And every year there's a Bloody Judge, which is just someone in the industry who gets sent all these films and is asked to please choose their favorite. So she also chose one. And I put that all online also. But she chose a film called The Tick.
Yeah, called Tick.
Tick, yes.
And it's interesting because in this printing, it has capital T, small I, capital C, capital K. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that means something, but I thought it was interesting.
It seems to me like it's, you know, Andrew, whatever I'm trying to say. But it seems like it should stand for something. Yeah. But that was super. I don't know if it does, but it's kind of a neo-vampire-ish kind of post-apocalyptic twist, sort of.
Right. Certain, yeah, very certain interesting. Humans are not quite what they seem, and they're parasitical.
But yeah, I mean, we could just keep. I mean, Road Trash was crazy. Creaker was crazy. So many good ones.
Yeah. Yeah. There might have been maybe three or four that I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Not
maybe,
so much.
Yeah.
The rest, absolute joys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, get to it. Check this out.
Yeah, we got to see very first, actually, right after the first bumper, the first short film, we got to see Bad Resolution by a guy that we were lucky enough to know through connections at the Nerd Out and have now run into a bunch and hung out with. Mr. Stephen K. Jackley did Bad Resolution, which was a crazy, dark, and semi-brutal take on New Year's resolutions gone bad.
Yeah. And I think you just mentioned this filmed part that part at the Nerd Out. Very existential in some parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's so cool because we were chatting with him 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think it was, and he was talking about wrapping this up and getting editing done. And then we see it on the screen, and that was super cool.
Just all around fun. Four days of crazy insanity.
It's more than just sitting there watching some
movies. Oh my
goodness,
it
is. There's so much going on in there, from the meeting of the people to the seeing the backstories. I mean, we got the opportunity to watch one of our fellow podcast people out there here locally, the Scariest Things podcast.
Yeah.
Mike and Eric get up on stage with Mr. Garris and actually have a 30-minute
cool
interview panel with him. Yeah.
Some absolutely hilarious material from Mick Garris shared, which, of course, we're not going to talk about because you got to go listen to their podcast if you want to hear that. But
yeah,
what
yeah,
a good interview it was. And go to their podcast anyways because it's fantastic.
And they are the nicest guys. I had the really cool chance to meet them at Wizard World. I sat down with their booth and chatted with them for about 15 minutes maybe. Did a little podcast interview with them. So, yeah, the Scariest Things podcast. Very cool guys.
Yeah.
Check them out.
We're bouncing back and forth a little talk about maybe getting together with them and doing something, and that would really just be so amazing.
We'll
so
do some intense research on how we choose the beers for the movies.
It's what we do, right, I guess. I got to sit next to and hang out and thank Mr. Brian Trenchard-Smith, who is not a household name, but he's made 43 friggin' movies including, by the way, Leprechaun 3 and 4. So he took the Leprechaun to both Vegas and space, which if you haven't heard our Leprechaun episode, you can hear all about those gyms. But I got to thank him for bringing to me BMX Bandits.
I couldn't believe how excited you got once you saw that on his resume.
Goodness, so excited. And I went to him and I said, hey, you know, I would be remiss if I let you leave this festival without thanking you for BMX Bandits. And he looked at me like I was an idiot. And he goes, that was a long time ago and you're seeing better stuff on screen right now. And I was like, yeah. But none of those introduced a 15-year-old Nicole Kidman to me right at the exact same time I was riding BMX bikes around. And now I wanted to catch bank robbers. And
I imagine his look was much the same look on my face when you discovered that and were so excited about it.
Yeah.
Now, if only you had known that when you were sitting next to him on the couch.
Still thrilled. Yeah, I didn't find out until that evening and then talked about him the next day.
But that was fun.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this a second ago, but I think when people think of a film festival, they do think all you're going to do is just sit there and watch movies, and oh my God, how boring, and oh, I'm going to get so tired of it, and oh, I'm certainly not going to do it for multiple days in a row. There was so much more to it.
With all these extra layers in there, there is so much more. And you could just go and watch film, but sure. Man, I'm telling you, these people are so friendly, so open-armed.
Yep.
You need to get up, seek these people out, engage with the festival. You know, engage with the people. They will share. They will talk. They will accommodate.
Support them.
Yeah.
Keep them excited. Keep them interested in making films so that we get amazing films coming out in the years to come.
I can't believe how just awesomely friendly Mick Garris was. There's a spot after the film festival that they go to, the Moon and Sixpence, this little British pub, Irish pub. And, you know, he comes rolling in at 11 o'clock at night, you know, having pints with everybody. Oh, yeah. It's just so much fun.
I loved, and maybe we'll share these as podcasts go into the future when we need someone to back up maybe our opinion on some things, but I loved every single thing that came out of that gentleman's mouth right before he said, okay, well, I didn't say this, but because there was some gems.
There was.
And that's the kind of thing you're not going to get by watching his movies on TV.
Well, one
you
of the
gotta go to this stuff.
Gems was, you know, he does a podcast and he said they had Stephen King on his podcast, which was the first podcast Stephen King has ever been on here just recently.
That's insane.
Yeah, I'm like, how does somebody like Stephen King not? I don't know, but
well, he's very selective apparently the interviews that he does and all of those things. But you got to check out Postmortem. Jeez, why can we not talk? Postmortem is Mick Garris's podcast, and he has amazing people on there. Neil Gaiman just recently.
Yeah.
You know, he has sat down with Cassandra Peterson, Elvira. So, I mean, people from all over the horror world and all different levels.
Yeah, and he's no stranger to that, because during the Masters of Horror, you know, he's chilling with Clark Biker. That one's for you, Grace.
Yeah.
You know, and all those legends.
Yes. So. Clive Barker, of course, in case someone else is going, who the hell is... Yeah. It was a lot of fun. We wanted to come on here and do an episode about it, not only to share with you guys how excited we are about it, but also to get you excited about going to things like this in your community, or even better, coming to our community and going to this one right here.
Yes.
This is what we got to put our energy into. We have to put it into supporting independent.
I can think of worse things.
Yeah. Support your independents, support your locals, support the new and the up and coming when it comes to horror.
Otherwise, yeah, and these guys have such a beautiful little trifecta of craft beer and movies and theater. It's just...
Yeah. It'll keep us from getting more of those numbers that Mick Garris was saying he's allergic to.
Oh, yeah.
When you say he's allergic to the word franchise, and he cringes every time he sees a movie with a number in the title.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is how we keep from having that, and nothing but that is by supporting these guys right now and getting some fresh voices and some new ideas. We're always bitching about it.
Why are you remaking the thing I don't like? Why don't you make something new?
Well, go support these guys, and they will.
Tons of new stuff here. Oh,
yeah. But without the support, the studios won't put money into it, so this is where that starts.
Yeah. Also happy to join them. I'm happy that you and I joined up tonight and listeners are joining us here. I think this was a super cool weekend.
Definitely. And special thanks to Brian and Gwen Callahan for doing this, for making this a thing that we can we can go to. These things don't just happen out of thin air. So
incredibly passionate people about this, yeah. And it shows, and they're so friendly and so open-armed.
Definitely a new passion of ours, so hopefully we can become more involved in this kind of thing in the future. And yeah, till then, stay tuned. We'll keep watching that Hollywood stuff till these guys get there.
Dang straight. Peace.
Bye.
Blue, ha, ha, ha.